disturbing discovery at an abandoned mobile home park.
Another suicide.
The nation's suicide rate is at its highest point since 1986.
When police came to the house, they saw tons and tons of trash. Turns out the daughter is a hoarder.
Crews made the gruesome discovery today inside a home.
They had 70 cats and dogs, mostly dogs. They found one deceased kitten inside the home.
A woman was found dead in a local home. That house had been tented for fumigation work.
The following is a true story and contains explicit content. Names and locations have been kept anonymous in order to protect the privacy of those involved. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm your host, Vanessa Fearson, and this is a true story. When people hear about crime scene cleaners, they tend to think it's kind of a glamorous job. It's certainly unique, and many would say interesting. Crime and death are typically taboo subjects, though. At least, most don't like to think about it. So it's easy to see the appeal in making a living in people dying. But one thing nobody considers is that it's still a business. You have expenses and bills to pay, marketing, hiring, stocking materials and inventory, and everything that comes with running a business. So it's not always easy. This particular week was one of the good ones. Well, sort of. We had a lot of business, however, every job was being covered by insurance. For those of you who have never dealt with an insurance company, basically, that means we have to wait for the claim to be processed and paid out before we collect a check. This can take anywhere from 2 weeks to a year. So we were working, but we weren't bringing in any money. It's just something you deal with, and as long as you keep a steady stream of business, you'll maintain a fairly steady flow of income. Anyway, it was a Friday, and we hadn't worked that day, so we thought we were going to end our week on a quiet note. But of course, much like life, death happens. Or, in this case, murder happened. It's always a mixture of emotions when calls like these come in. On the one hand, it's sad hearing that a fellow human being has been brutally slain. But on the other hand, well, if I'm being honest, it means money. You can judge if you want, but few can do what I do, and as unpleasant as it may be, it needs to be done. We offer a much-needed service, and we pride ourselves on making these extremely difficult times at least a little easier on the people left behind. So I'm not going to pretend to feel guilty about compensation. In any event, the caller was actually the investigating detective. It's very rare that we're contacted directly by the police. Usually it's a family member or family friend. Anyway, we took down the information and told him we were on our way. We loaded up the truck and headed out. When we arrived, we were greeted by the detective who had called us. He told us the CSI team was still inside and they'd need another hour to finish their investigation. While we were waiting, he filled us in on the heartbreaking details. The father of the family had run out on them a few years back, which left the mother to raise their 13-year-old son. Apparently, it had been a long time coming, so when it finally happened, it wasn't a big surprise, but that didn't make it any less difficult. It's an unfortunately common story. One where the family left behind is forced to deal with the heartbreak of abandonment and struggling to continue on. I happen to have a wonderful partner who contributes to our household in so many ways, but I still find myself overwhelmed at times. I mean, we both do. So I don't know how I would do it alone. I can only imagine how difficult this must have been for her. And it was only about to get worse. One of the after effects of situations like these is that the children caught in the crossfire are more likely to act out. My own parents divorced when I was about halfway through my teens. It was mostly amicable, and both parents remained a constant in my life. So I may not have had it quite as bad, but I remember the gamut of initial emotions. The grief, the confusion, the anger. It sucked. As the detective was talking, I quickly found myself sympathizing with this kid and was, well, not for the first time, amazed at how the things happening to one in their lifetime make it feel like they're only happening to you. You know that you're not the only one, but, you know, it feels like you are. When they happen to you, they're the worst that it could possibly be. Then you hear a story like this and realize that it could have been much worse. You're not the only one who went through whatever it is you went through, and you came out much better than you could have. Anyway, so when this kid started failing in school and lashing out at his mother and teachers, it was assumed that he was just expressing his anger at his dad bailing. But it got progressively worse and it didn't let up. It got so bad that his mother couldn't cope any longer, so she sought the help of her father. He had always had a good and close relationship with his grandson. From a young age, they had gone hunting and fishing together, all the things you would want from a grandpa. The boy looked up to his grandfather. I mean, he was the father figure that was missing from this kid's life. However good a substitute this guy may have been, it seems he wasn't good enough, and they were too late to save this kid. Nothing changed, and it only seemed to grow worse, as impossible as that may seem. For the last week or so, he had been behaving beyond the already extreme rebellious manner. He was observed many times muttering angrily to himself. Some might say he was talking to the voices. He'd stay locked in his room for hours at a time and very rapidly withdrew from all contact. Mere hours before we arrived on scene, his mother had just gotten home from work when he made a rare appearance outside of his room, and he was greeted by his grandfather. Rather than returning the friendly greeting, this kid chose to start cussing at his grandpa. This was more of the same and nothing the old man wasn't used to by this point. However, it wasn't the same. His grandfather didn't know it, but his long life was about to be cut short. This kid followed up his tirade of four-letter words with accusations. These weren't the "you drink the last of the milk" type claims. He claimed the kindly old man was in fact the devil himself, and he wasn't about to let this demon harm him or his family. He had to stop him. This wasn't some on-the-spot accusation. He must have suspected his grandpa for some time now, for as his grandpa sat on the couch, he was quickly introduced to the business side of the very shotgun he had taught his grandson to hunt with. How's that for a Hollywood ending? I can't imagine what went through this poor guy's mind as he stared death in the eyes in the form of twin barrels aimed at his face. I can only assume that shock and disbelief were pretty high on the list. Could this young man, whom he bounced on his knee as a boy, really follow through on such a brutal threat? The sad answer is yes. That's exactly what he did. Most people would say that two lives ended at that moment. The obvious first being the poor grandfather whose brains were now splattered throughout the living room, and the second being the deranged teenager who would undoubtedly spend the rest of his life either in prison or a mental facility. But there was a third. Although that life wasn't quite over, it certainly would never be the same again. That was the mother. This poor lady had lost her husband, then her father and son at the same time. If there was anyone who has ever felt death's oft cruel sting, it was her. Although she wasn't there, my heart went out to her. It was difficult not to put myself in her shoes, and it broke my heart. I'm going to sidetrack here for a second. With this particular scene, I found myself thinking how a family member deals with having a child who murders another. I mean, the love for your child, I don't think would change, right? But you don't love what they did. It's got to be quite the confliction. I mean, you feel for the harmed family, but yet you still love your child. You almost feel wrong. Anyway, I caught myself thinking about that, and it's really easy to get tied up in the what if. All right, sorry, back on track here. The detective told us that they suspected drugs were involved. Now, the hardest drug I've ever done is Tylenol. So, my personal experience with mind-altering drugs, well, it's non-existent. However, we live in a drug-fueled society, and you can't help at least learning about drugs, even if you've never taken them. The only drug I've ever heard of that twists and warps your mind to the point of murder or suicide are the antidepressants, which seems to be quite the misnomer if you ask me. However, there was another drug that did just that. At this point in time, reports of zombies crowded the news feeds, and there was a new drug that was apparently responsible. bath salts. It's basically synthetic cocaine, and its effects include paranoia, hallucinations, and violence. Well, check, check, and big frickin' check. This, all compounded with the kid's pre-existing emotional stimuli, it was very plausible that taking such a mind-altering substance could have driven him to such a heinous act. As hard as it was to hear this story, I've learned that stories like this are all too common. Not long before this job, we had done another homicide where a man's son had shot him in the face. It wasn't a shotgun, but still. A quick sidetrack here. This kid was labeled schizophrenic, or something, and required special attention to maintain any semblance of sanity. One evening, the voices got too loud and he had been mumbling to himself and grabbing his head. His father, an old schooler, thought he just needed some tough love and told his son to knock it off and act straight. Well, apparently, he didn't understand the finer points of mental illness in its extremes, and his son, in turn, went to his room and came back with a pistol. The dad still thought the kid was bluffing and told him to go ahead and pull the trigger. Well, for the first and last time, the kid obeyed his father. I could give you more examples, but the truth is, no matter your race, color, creed, or sexual orientation, we're all human beings, and we should feel an inherent drive to support each other and see to the continuation of our species. Any life lost in such a manner is tragic, but when you see it day after day, you get a bit desensitized to it. But this, well, this was a whole new level for me. If you're enjoying this episode, I want to take a moment to tell you about Resonate Recordings. Resonate Recordings edited, mixed, mastered, and produced the episode you're currently listening to. They offer professional podcasting services to podcasters all over the world. Editing, mixing, mastering, custom production, sound design, music creation, hosting setup, and even RSS feed configuration are just a few of the services they offer. If you're considering starting a podcast or want to increase the quality of your podcast, go to resonaterecordings.com to see how they can save you time and help take your podcast to the next level. Resonate Recordings has a professional team of experienced audio engineers, producers, and musicians who all have a passion for podcasting. Right now, my listeners can go to resonaterecordings.com and get their first episode produced for free. No commitments, no strings attached. You too can have an expertly crafted podcast at no risk to you. So what are you waiting for? Go to resonaterecordings.com and complete the form at the bottom of the page. Just tell them Vanessa sent you. Now back to the show. The CSI team finally completed their investigation, and as they started packing up their equipment, we started setting up ours. We entered the home and it was immediately obvious this was definitely once a hunting family. The walls were lined with stuffed and mounted animals, deer, elk, a pheasant, and even a mountain lion. As I looked over the trophies, I found myself wondering how many this kid and his grandfather had scored together. I shook my head away from such thoughts and focused on the task at hand. The living room was in disarray, but it was difficult to say if this was the result of the crime itself, the investigation, or simply the everyday condition of the home. What was not difficult to see was the blood and brain matter fanned out from the back of the couch and onto the sliding glass door. I could almost vividly replay the event in front of me. I could see the young boy standing there with his gun aimed at his grandpa's face. I could see the look of terror on the old man's face as he tried to calm his grandson and get him to put the gun down. It all played out in an instant in my head, and I was painfully aware of how quickly a life can be taken. With the living room in such disarray and the fact that the shotgun blast will propel blood, skull, and brain matter for quite a distance in every direction, the cleanup was very slow going. I had to check every item, every inch of every piece of furniture. Like I said, very slow going. It was at this job that I learned that blood, brains, and skull fragments can ricochet. As we made our way through the worst of it and into the kitchen, which was located around a slight corner from the living room where the victim had been shot, we continued to find such matter throughout. There's no direct line from the living room into the kitchen, and so there was no way for anything to have ended up in there other than bouncing off the walls. It's really not so hard to imagine, considering the momentum these bits can pick up when powered by the force of a shotgun blast. We made our way back through the living room to ensure we hadn't missed anything on the first pass. Fortunately, we didn't. I then found myself in the hallway off the living room. I noticed what appeared to be a trail of blood drops leading further into the house. At this point, it seemed like all the aftermath was contained in the living room area, and based on the circumstances of the crime, there was no reason to believe there was any blood anywhere else. But truth is stranger than fiction, as they say, and I was going to make sure there wasn't any more that needed our attention. So I followed the trail, and it was apparent that the state of disarray was the general condition of the house. Clothes, boxes, and other various items were strewn about the hallway, and each of the rooms that we passed was no better. The trail ended at the closed door of one of the bedrooms. I slowly opened the door and saw what most people only see in movies. There was a mattress standing on one end, leaning against the wall, forming a makeshift lean-to. Clothes, magazines, and other things thickly littered the floor. This wasn't really a big deal since it looked just like a hoarder's room, and it's what we deal with on the daily. What was a big deal were the walls. Every inch was covered in words, strange writings, and poems. It was like a huge canvas. Most of the rantings were satanic in content. For example, apparently Satan loved Mary and they were doing some devilish things up in a tree. Most of it could only make sense to the insane or possessed. It seemed to me that if anything, bath salts only served as a catalyst in the psycho killer concoction that we call this kid's mind. It took me a few minutes to take this all in. It didn't seem real. This wasn't a kid's bedroom. This was the set from a serial killer movie. But it wasn't that. It actually was someone's bedroom. I began to wonder how this kid got to where he was. Could this happen to my son? Could it be me someday staring down the barrel of a gun with my kid at the trigger? Of course I'd say no, but wouldn't this kid's mom have said the same thing 5 years ago? It was heartbreaking and scary to think about, and I forced myself to stop thinking. Whatever substance had created the trail that led me to this room wasn't blood. I have tests to prove it, and we weren't obligated to clean it. I closed the door and returned to the living room to begin cleaning our tools and packing up. After we had everything packed up and loaded onto the truck, I was closing the door to this house that was now clean, but would forever be tainted to what was left of this family. I silently shook my head in sadness and disbelief. It was then that it became very real for me how we arrive on these scenes of murder and death, knowing the victims as nothing but John Doe and a bloodstain. Often, we leave the scene knowing that the brain matter on the walls isn't just brain matter. It's someone's brain matter. I've said it before that the only way to stay in this business is to remain detached from the scene and the gore you're cleaning up, but sometimes it's hard. You can't help but learn who these people were after cleaning their blood off their possessions and memories. The pictures on the wall, the books on the shelf, and even the style of furniture all tell a story of who these people were. Some may be able to shut off their emotions in order to do this job, but as much as I love what I do, it's not something I'm willing to give up my humanity for. The day that I enter a scene and leave without feeling at least something is the day that I hang up my bio suit for good. If you've been listening to this podcast, you should know that at times I can't help but be curious about some of the scenes we clean up. This one was one of them. When I got home, I got onto the computer and did a little bit of cyber sleuthing. It didn't take too long to find the story covered on the local news. The reporters told essentially the same story the detective told us, save for a lot of the details. I was so shocked about the circumstances of this case that I followed the case for a couple of weeks. I was curious to see what the court was going to decide to do with him. Would he be tried as a minor? Would he be found to be competent to even stand trial? I thought I knew the answers, but the system can surprise you sometimes. I'm looking at you, Casey Anthony. Well, a couple of weeks later, I came across a follow-up story on the news. He had agreed to an on-camera interview. Naturally, I clicked play. Most of the video was simply a recap of the crime itself, but then they played a portion of the interview where he maintained that he did and still believes that his grandfather was a devil, and he had to save his whole family from a certain doom. He held to this story 2 weeks after the crime, but apparently even those who seem the craziest can still have a sense of right and wrong, because 1 week after this interview, he confessed to the truth. Initially, he had claimed that the voices told him that he had family members that were suffering in hell, and the only way to free them was to kill his grandfather, who was the devil. Turns out that this was a load of crap. What really happened is that this guy had been doing bath salts, for some time actually, and although they weren't to blame for the homicide, well, they were to some degree responsible for the horrible behavior prior to. One of the ways the grandfather was trying to help was by trying to get his grandson off the bath salts. Evidently, he resented those efforts and had no intention of ever stopping. One thing he was intent to stop was anyone getting in the way of him and his high. So he pulled the gun on his grandfather and stopped him for good. He openly admitted to fabricating the voices story, which he said he copied from the plot of a movie he'd seen. He concocted the story so he would get off with an insanity plea. Luckily, the system worked in this case, and he was sentenced to 40 years to life in prison. I can't really vouch for the efficacy of the prison system in terms of reform and rehabilitation. I can say it seems effective in keeping people like this guy off the streets. Well, at least I hope it does. Thank you for listening to The Cleaning of John Doe. Today's episode was produced by Resonate Recordings. If you're looking for another podcast while you're waiting for our next episode to drop, check out this one.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Samantha.
And we're the hosts of True Crime Storytime, a podcast for all things true crime.
We will be bringing you fortnightly episodes covering everything from murder and mystery, disappearances, theft and fraud,
abductions and kidnappings, and more importantly, trying to take a lesson away from each case, because every story has a message.
Awesome. Well, thanks for tuning in, and be sure to head over to Apple Podcast and subscribe. Well, this week's an exciting week because we have our 8 lucky winners from our gift card giveaway, and we also have our weekly t-shirt winner. So let me kick it off with the t-shirt winner. That winner is Sarah, R-E-I-J-N-E-N. Congratulations, Sarah. Be sure to email info@thecleaningofjohndoe.com. with your t-shirt size and your mailing address. We didn't hit our target of reviews, but that's okay. I was looking more for a reason to do a giveaway, so if I'm being honest. Our first winner is Cheryl, S-P-I-G-O-N-A-R-D-O. And then our second winner is Mary Howard. Third winner is Maria Sisk. Our fourth winner is Ashley Monteith. Our fifth winner is Nancy Eastman. Sixth winner is Miranda Piles. Our seventh winner is our only male, and his name is Kevin Schreiner. And then the last winner, number 8, is Mary Dalton. So congratulations, you guys. I'll get those gift cards popped in the mail to you ASAP. We're doing another giveaway just in time for the holidays. The details can be found on the Cleaning of John Doe's Facebook page. But basically, since the holidays are about giving, we ask that you nominate someone who has fallen on hard times, who is deserving and can use a little extra cheer. Send your submissions to info@thecleaningofjohndoe.com and we will randomly pick 2 winners to receive a $100 gift card of their choice. Winners will be announced next week on the December 12 episode, so send them in quickly. Be sure to tune in next week for 6 Months Dead, a story about a decomp and a theft on our job site.